The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter Number 8, Texts Number 48, 49, 50, and 51, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on October 17th, 2008, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
So, here today in 4th Canto, Chapter 8, Texts 48, 49, 50 and 51, we're getting a very vivid description of the different features of the Lord's transcendental body and those things which are decorating His transcendental body. And we're also getting the most wonderful boon from His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada that if one concentrates on these descriptions, one will never fall down. That's a pretty powerful benediction. If we consider how many devotees have fallen down in the path, and we would not like to ourselves be such a fatality. And we see here a means by which it is guaranteed that we will not be such a fatality. This is something worthy of taking note of. The interesting further note is the descriptions. In other words, one may say, well, I'm not actually seeing that form of Vishnu to meditate on what I saw when he was standing there looking at me, so what's my hope? That's not what is stated here. What's stated here is one concentrates on the descriptions. You have just heard the descriptions. And the descriptions are fully available to you in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You have the book right there in your hand, you see. The descriptions are available. So if you will note these descriptions and you remember these descriptions, then there is no chance that you will ever fall down from Krishna consciousness. So the question is, how would that be possible? What is the scientific reason why meditating on these bodily descriptions of the Lord protect one from falling down? That they do protect one, we understand because we have faith in the words of our founder Acharya. We know that we won't fall down. But why? How does the process work, you see? One should go deep into understanding this philosophy. The philosophy and the bodily descriptions of the Lord's features here and the decorations on His body, they are non-different. So if you will deeply dive into understanding the science of bhakti, and you will concentrate always on the science of bhakti, how it works, why it works, how to make it successful. If you're always thinking like this, then also you'll be guaranteed to never fall down. So in this particular verse, this word bhutena, eka bhutena, with great attention and concentration. That's a very important thing. Eka means one, and bhutena means attention, with great focused attention. And the ena means in Sanskrit, the ending will change the meaning. It's like you can say Krishna, that refers to the Supreme Person. If you say Krishnena, it means with Krishna or by Krishna. So here, eka bhutena means with great. Eka bhuta would be great attention, and eka bhutena with great attention. So, this is how we have to approach the practice of Krishna consciousness, with great attention, with great focus. So the point is, if you really focus on what you're doing, if your mind isn't flying all over the milk, the universe while you're doing your service, here, there, jumping like a monkey from this object of sense enjoyment to that object of sense enjoyment, if you'll actually just focus exactly on what you're doing, then you won't fall down. You just got to stay focused. So the question is, why will being focused not or prevent one from falling down? The reason is described, actually, the answer to that question, I mean to say, is described in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text number 59. Vishayavani vartante nirahara shadehina rasavar sangmasopyasya parang vishtonivartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements, by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So the point is that if you concentrate on your Krishna consciousness activities, if you concentrate on the Krishna consciousness philosophy, if you concentrate on everything related to Krishna, because everything in relation with Krishna is also Krishna. Just like prasadam is in relationship with Krishna, so it is also Krishna. Anything that connects us with Krishna is also, in one sense, considered to be Krishna. It's like the spiritual master connects us with Krishna, so he is considered to be Krishna, the external manifestation of Krishna. So, in this way, if we will connect with Krishna in so many ways, through the spiritual master, through the prasadam, through the Vaishnava association, through the books, through the deities, through the holy names, through the service we've been given by our spiritual master, by our temple authority, the service that we're given. If we will concentrate on whatever service we're given, understanding that Krishna has manifested in the form of this service. Even if you've been asked to, you know, mop the temple room floor, if you do that with concentration to do a first-class job, that meditation is meditating on Krishna. Because Krishna has manifested in the form of that service. And actually, Prabhupada in India, of course, to be a cleaner is considered a very low-class thing. You see, if you're a cleaner, that's the low-class people. They bring the low-class people and do the cleaning. So when there was a temple installation, ceremony, Prabhupada was giving a temple opening address, I think it was in Hyderabad, yes. He told everyone, he said, whether you're bathing the deity or you're cleaning the temple is the same. He said, the body is the temple is the body of Krishna, do not think otherwise. So whether the pujari is on the altar and he's bathing the beautiful forms of Shishi Gornatai, or you've been asked to clean the toilet, non-different. It's the same thing. Because it's everything that's being used in Krishna's service also is non-different from Krishna. I remember one of my godbrothers, when he was a young brahmachari in our Detroit temple, Uttama Shloka Prabhu, my godbrother, when he was given the service of cleaning the toilet room. Now, would anybody be enlivened, oh wow, I get to clean the toilet room every day. That's my service, to keep it clean. When people come in and mess it up, I have to go in and clean it up. Would anybody get enlivened by that normally? You see? Oh my God, what kind of service do I have to do? Oof, you know, that'd be the normal attitude. But he said no. He wanted to make it very first class. He took it with great enthusiasm to make the cleanest possible toilet he could make. And with great enthusiasm, he kept the toilet room very nice and clean, you see. So in this way, whatever service we've been given, we should take it with great enthusiasm. And this is one of the personal instructions that I received from His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. I was very inspired, of course, having joined the movement sheltered under the wing of His Holiness Vishnu Jana Maharaj, who was very much a dynamic preacher and very eager and enthusiastic and always doing amazing things to spread this movement on a daily basis. So I was really inspired by Vishnu Jnana Maharaj's association. And when I sent my Guru Dakshina into Srila Prabhupada, that was the advantage of being initiated by a letter. Instead of just handing the Dakshina to some servant so they can give it to Prabhupada, which you would probably normally do if he would, you know, Prabhupada is at your temple, you would just collect your Dakshina and give it to some servant. Or if you're really lucky, you get to go in and personally offer it to Prabhupada. But I sent it by letter. And I got to write Prabhupada a letter, my first chance to write to my spiritual master a letter. And I sent my Dakshini in with a letter. Prabhupada very carefully, just like an accountant, he noted down in the letter exactly the amount of the three checks that I had sent him to the penny. I received your three checks for this. He went this way to make sure there's no stealing going on. That everything's going on properly. He received all three checks, and this was the amount of the checks. He gave me the exact amount of each check. And I must have said something that I was eager for spreading this movement, being in Vishnu Jnana Maharaj's association. And Prabhupada was so happy, he was so pleased that I told him I was eager to spread this movement. He said, "I can see that you're a very sincere, enthusiastic boy who is very eager to spread this Krishna consciousness movement." He said, "If you will continue enthusiastically as you were doing, then surely Krishna will bless you." So it is said that one should take the order of one's spiritual master as one's very life and soul. So I decided to do that. I decided, all right, no matter what happens, from now on, I don't care, come hell, come high water, doesn't matter. I'm always going to be enthusiastic because Prabhupada ordered me. So I've been doing that ever since that day when I received the letter, and it works. It works. If you would, whatever service you've been given, you do it with enthusiasm, with gusto, with joy, with happiness, you see. Not begrudgingly, that, oh, I got to do this service. But no, this is a wonderful opportunity for millions and millions of births. I've been struggling in the cycle of birth and death, and now I've been given the opportunity to render devotional service to the Lord. This is my ticket out of the material world. This sweeping this floor, or cleaning this toilet, or distributing this book, or washing that pot, or serving the prasadam, all of these service activities, doing the deity worship, all of these service activities, these are my ticket into the transcendental world where Krishna is having his eternal pastime with Srimati Radharani and the gopis and the gopas and the cows and the calves and the bamboos and the butterflies and the grass and the rocks and the river Jamuna. This is my ticket to enter into that transcendental world beyond time and space, beyond all the hell going on in Copenhagen. This is my ticket, you see. So let me take it with enthusiasm. So it's only if you take it with enthusiasm that you can have ekabhutena. You cannot artificially do something with great attention unless you're enthusiastic. That's the difficulty about the Maya bodies, you see. They try to put great attention to meditating on Brahman. But there's no rasa, there's no reciprocation with Brahman, therefore they cannot maintain their enthusiasm, and in due course of time, patanti yadho, they fall back down again into the cycle of birth and death. But when you can actually have a loving relationship with the supreme, most amazing, beautiful person, the most powerful, beautiful, renowned, knowledgeable, wealthy and famous person in all of existence, the person who is the very source of everything, the person by whose energy everything is going on at every minute, even the sunrise, the sunset, even your heartbeat. If you can have a personally reciprocate with that supreme person, and as it says here, you see, he looks very mercifully toward the devotee. It's not some impersonal thing that Krishna is just meditating on Brahman. Krishna is meditating on his devotees. Yeme bhakta jana apartat na me bhakta chetedana mad bhaktanam che ye bhaktas te me bhakta tamamata shishi gurnitai ki jai. Krishna tells Arjuna in the Adi Purana, he says, if you are my devotee, you're not my devotee. But if you're the devotee of my devotee, then you're my actual devotee. So Krishna wants to see that we are devoted to his devotees. That's why we have to have a guru. Because the guru is that person that we become completely devoted to. Unless we have a devotee that we're completely devoted to, at least one, then Krishna will never accept our service, you see. Krishna, the devotees are so dear to Krishna that he wants to see that his devotees are worshipped more than he is worshipped. Therefore, every day we have Guru Puja. Even in Mangal Arti, when we're worshipping, offering the Arti to Gaurinitai, the greatest worship of Gaurinitai is to sing their Gravastakam prayers to the spiritual master. There is one, Gaudiya Mad Sanyasi, his name is Narayan Maharaj, and he said, this is wrong. It is rasabas. One should not sing Gravastakam prayers when you're offering an arti to Gaurinitai or Radha Krishna. He says, this is wrong thing, you see. He claims to be a well-wisher and a devoted to Prabhupada, but then he turns around and says that Prabhupada trained us incorrectly, you see. Therefore, one should never go to hear from this Narayan Maharaj. He's traveling all over the world trying to get as many ISKCON members as he can into his camp so he can think he's a big, big world preacher. But actually, he's committing offenses against his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, because he's saying that Prabhupada trained us incorrectly. The fact is, it's very wonderful to sing the Gravastakam prayers and we're offering the arti to Gaurinitai. Because this gives the greatest pleasure to Sri Sri Gaurinitai when they see that we are worshipping their greatest devotee, the divine grace Srila Prabhupada. So in this way, we can understand that Krishna is very, very devoted to his devotees. Because there's nothing that pleases him more to see when his devotees are being very, very nicely worshipped and served. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes.
Well, we know when we live in a temple, morning program, evening program is very, very important. And Prabhupada emphasized it very much that we should be there for the whole morning program, the whole evening program. Is that also so for the grihasthas? Is that also so for the householders?
Yes, of course. Those who are living, of course, in many temples, there are householders who are part of the ashram scene, who are also resident in the ashram. But whether they're resident in the ashram, everyone is resident right there in the ashram. They are required, actually, to come to Mangalarti, attend the programs. Otherwise, the Prabhupada didn't want a free hotel. Of course, if you have some other arrangement here for renting out space, that's another thing. And anybody who's staying in the temple, who's getting the facility of room and board in the temple, they are required to attend the program. That is a fact. Now what about householders who are living on the outside? Actually, everyone should sing these Gravastakam prayers in the early morning. Everyone, whether they're a householder, living outside, everyone should rise early in the morning and sing their Gavastakam prayers during the Brahma Muhurta. Why? Because along with the Gavastakam prayers, there's a ninth prayer. Did you know that? There's a ninth prayer which describes the benefits of chanting the eight prayers. The ninth prayer says that anyone who chants these eight prayers during Brahma Muhurta, they will achieve the direct service of Lord Shiva. At the time of death, they will achieve the direct service of Lord Sri Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. That's why Prabhupada engages us in singing Gravastakam prayers at Mangalarti. Because that gives the greatest benediction. That at the time of death, anyone who made a habit of singing Gravastakam every morning during Brahma Muhurta, they are guaranteed to enter into Goloka Vrindavan and be directly serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you may say, well, that's a long way off, I'm not going to worry about it now, now I feel like sleeping in. Later on, when I get older, then I'll start going to Mangalarti. No, forget it. Whatever habits you create now, that's going to go with you your whole life. You see? Therefore, brahmachari, you see. The Vedic culture, at the age of 5, the boy goes into the ashram of guru, and he spends 20 years as a menial servant in the house of the spiritual master, even if he's the prince. And he's going to be the king. Still, he takes the humble service, it's humble service of the spiritual master, even if he's told to clean the toilet room and he's the prince, it doesn't matter, he does whatever the spiritual master asks. He does it with love. Even as described, he does what the spiritual master's wife asks. When of course, not all spiritual masters have wives, but in my case, that's it. But it's actually when Krishna and Sudama went to the forest to gather the firewood, it was on the request of Guru Mata, not on Guru's request, but Guru Mata had requested. So they become a humble servant of Guru, and if the Guru is a married man, then the Guru's wife also. They become humble servant of Guru and the Guru's wife, and lovingly do whatever is asked, even if it's a menial service. In this way, for 20 years, brahmachari, and then at the age of 25, if the boy feels inclined for married life, then with the blessings of his spiritual master, he enters into grahastha ashram. If not, he remains on to become sannyasi in due course of time. So in this way, the Vedic culture was very nice, that everyone is praying. So that householder then, after 20 years of brahmachari training, then he will carry on in the household life. They'll have nice worship going on, and the house will become like an ashram also. It is called grihastha ashram. If the home of the householder is not an ashram, if it's not a place where regular worship of Krishna is going on, then it is not. They are not called grihasthas, they are called grihamedis. The house has to be an altar. There should be an altar. There should be everything. Should be all the food that's cooked in the home must be offered in the altar. There should be kept nicely decorated with flowers. Everything very nice. You see, the temple is the place where the householders can come and see how to set up their home ashram. We're showing an example for the householders by having a nice worship going on here. How they can, at least they should have photograph. Now, Radha Krishna worship they should not take unless they have permission from their spiritual master. It's a very high standard. But if householder is very, has nice, they can also get Gornitai deities at home if they're very, they're regulated. They get up every day and have Mangal Arti, and they bathe the Lord every day and like this, then they can also have deities at home. But actually, Prabhupada encouraged everyone to live close to the temple and just worship at the temple, not to have separate worship. That was his instruction. Like in Los Angeles, he set up a householder community. There's apartments. The temple bought the apartments across the street from the temple, so the householders could have apartments and also be regular part of the morning program. And when Tamal Krishna Maharaj got became the GBC of our temple in Dallas, he did the same thing. He bought the whole neighborhood. He got a loan from the BBT. It was an inexpensive neighborhood at the time. He bought the whole neighborhood. They did it secretly. They had a devotee doing it undercover, so no one knew the Hare Krishnas were buying up the neighborhood, because everybody would jack the price up. But they went around and bought and negotiated through a real estate agent. No one knew what was going on, so no one raised the price. Very cheap. They bought about 10 houses all around the temple, across the street. They bought practically the whole block of the temple, and the whole block was bought by the temple. a whole block. Except there's only two buildings, I think. There was two commercial buildings on the other side of the block they didn't buy. But they bought every house in the entire block was purchased by the temple. The houses across the street also were bought by the temple. Almost all of them. Maybe there's one or two holdouts, you know. But just so the householders could live right there, they created a whole village. So the householders could also, you know, come for Mangal Arati every morning, have a nice morning program, and then go to work, you see. And then come home in the evening and again have the darshan of the deity. So actually it is not just for brahmacharis. This temple worship is meant for the householders too. They should live, ideally the householders should all live very, very close so they can also come every morning. This room should be packed every day. I remember in those days we had like 80 people at Mangal Arati every day. And even today in Los Angeles, still, you may have been to our Los Angeles temple. Brahmacharis, householders, it's full of devotees every morning. Very wonderful Mangal Arati. So that's actually a very good thing. And the temple can eventually establish, buy up all the neighborhood, become wealthy enough to buy up all the houses in the neighborhood. So the householders can live and they can easily come from Mangal Arati as well. Any other questions? Yeah.
So we see today that normally brahmacharis do not join at 5.
Mm-hmm.
Today normally brahmacharis do not join at the age of 5.
Yes, that's
so,
right.
So we see that we are a little behind. So should the brahmacharis still go through so long training before they get married?
I know in my case, I joined around the age of, I think 22. So I did 14 years of brahmacharya myself. And actually, I got married because I was asked to get married by the GBC. Tamal Krishna has asked me to get married. On his, he arranged this wedding and I just surrendered to it because I always, Prabhupada told me to do what I was told and I did what I was told. But, I was, 14 years I spent. So it's actually very good. If one thinks I would like to eventually get married, then we recommend that you practice brahmacharya as long as possible because that will give you power to be a good householder. A householder is also brahmachari. In fact, it's sometimes said to be more difficult than brahmachari, you see. For a brahmachari, the object of sex enjoyment is not present. He's protected. But just imagine if you had an example one time given one. Just imagine if you went to the Sunday feast and they put the plate in front of you and said, and don't take. So that's the example given. You see, if you're fasting, that's one thing. But if you're fasting and they say, okay, now sit while you're fasting, you want to sit here and here's the feast plate, Maha feast plate. There's the bakuras, the gulab jamun, the samosas, the sweet rice, the cheesecake, and you have to fast. So the household life is compared to that. You see. Brahmachari, he's fasting, but the feast is not in front of him. But the householder, he has to fast, but the feast is sitting right in front of him. So that's why sometimes said the householders, one who's actually a fixed up householder has to be very Krishna conscious, very, very Krishna conscious to be successful as a householder. Brahmachari life, in that sense, is easier. Brahmacharis and the sannyasis have it easy in that sense. But to be a successful Krishna conscious householder, so if one is inclined to the household life, then it's described, brahmachari ashram is for those who are attached and for those who are detached, both. It's a training ground for both. You see, sannyas life is for the detached. Vanaprastha is detached. You see, grihastha is attached, and brahmachari life is for both the attached and the detached, both. So one should follow a brahmachari life, and not just immediately think about getting married. One should say, let me get some good training. I should have gotten 20 years of brahmachari training before married life. So let me hold on as long as I can to become a good, staunch brahmachari, you see. Develop a taste for preaching, for doing puja. You know, very nice, good taste for preaching and puja, both. A brahmachari should have, be well-rounded. He should be able to do puja and worshipping the deities, dressing the deities, bathing the deities, even sewing for the deities. Can be there too. Prabhupada used to sew for his deities. So one can, you know, with great relish to serve the Lord, and then preaching, with great enthusiasm, preaching, book distribution, lecturing. The brahmachari should, and then whatever needs to be done, doing the needful, whatever requires, being surrendered to whatever the needful is. The brahmachari should train himself in this way, preaching, puja, and the needful. And then, with that training, then he'll become very good. If he, in his household life, he can be a very good father and raise Krishna conscious children. He can be a spiritual master for his wife and for his children, a very good, a qualified spiritual master for his wife and children. Unless one is qualified to be a spiritual master, it's better, you're not trained well enough yet. Actually, brahmachari, household means you have to be a spiritual master of your wife and children. So, any other question? Yeah.
Did Prabhupada encourage, like in a married couple, grihastha, for the woman to work or to stay at home?
Vedic culture means the woman doesn't work. There's no such thing in Vedic culture of a woman going for a working job. It doesn't exist in Vedic culture.
But what does Prabhupada encourage for our circumstances here in the West?
I never heard him encouraging that women should be working. Of course, it can be done under circumstance nowadays. Actually, you know, when I was a boy growing up in America, maybe it must have been the same in Europe too in those days, back in the 50s, the women didn't work. That was not the system. There was a few women working as secretaries and school teachers, and that was about it. You know, practically, the women were not in the workplace. They weren't. They stayed at home and took care of the children. There was no daycare, you know. The women stayed home and took care of the children. That was the system when I was a kid. Everyone. But later on, this whole thing where the women started entering the workplace. So even in American culture, it's a new addition. Women in the workplace. And now you put men, you throw men and women into the workplace, and it, you know, it becomes a whole, becomes surcharged with sexuality, you know. This whole thing, all this sexual stuff going on all the time, subtle sex and gross sex too, going on in the workplace. It's just a, actually Prabhupada said that even there should not be co-education in the university. Unless they're married. You shouldn't have boys and girls attending the same university unless they were already married. He was saying in the Bhagavatam, he said, it should not be in the university, there should not be, after boys and girls attain puberty, they should not be educated together, they should be educated separately. And it's actually, in the U.S. now, that's happening. They're finding, even in the public schools in Dallas, they're setting up, they're finding it's actually good for the education to separate them, the boys and the girls in different training in different schools. It actually helps them to in their education. They actually found them. They're finding it. It's amazing. The karmis are like coming back. So, I don't remember any specific orders from Srila Prabhupada. It's not forbidden for a woman to go to the workplace, but I know in my marriage, I never sent my mother didn't work when I was a child. She did work as a school teacher after I grew up because she had done that before. She was trained that way and she liked doing that. But I never sent my wife to work, even though it certainly would have helped and she was willing to work. It would have helped financially, but I just, I never felt it was right to send her out in the workplace. I never felt that was, I always felt that was wrong, and I never did it. But I don't say it's wrong for others to do it. But in my own personal life, I never felt it was right to send my wife out to work a job. That's the man's business. That's Vedic culture, and it's the way I saw America when I was also growing up. Because, of course, in my case, my wife and I were like vanaprasthas from the very beginning. We weren't into, you know, grihastha life, having kids and all those things. We just wanted to preach. From the very beginning, we were just a preaching team. But generally, household life means having children. And that means the wife needs to stay home and properly train the children. And that means you really can't depend on two incomes if you want to have a proper household life. You can't do it. Because those children, they need the mother at home. And you really can't depend on two incomes. You need to be in a position where you can get in the household, can get by on one income. And then when children come, they can be properly trained. In fact, we have one of our devotees. His parents, his father, the mother did not work. The father did the work. The mother stayed at home and raised the sons. Not only did she raise, but they didn't send them to public school either. She homeschooled the children. He taught them how to read using the Bhagavatam. They learn how to read instead of, you know, Tom, C, whatever. I don't know, I forget what we grew up with in the public school. You know, something like Dick and Sue or something, I forget. But they grew up reading, learning how to read, learning English by studying the Bhagavatam. That's how they learned English, how to read and write. And the boy was so... And as a young kid, he was writing articles for Bhakti Guided magazine. You may have seen in the old BTGs, Ravi Gupta, he used to write articles in BTG. And they show the articles to the university. And the university, they said, this boy is brilliant. On the strength of his Bhakti Guided articles, they let him into the university at the age 13. He was homeschooled all the way to the age 13. At age 13, he went into university. And he became a highly learned scholar in Sanskrit. He has a degree. Now he teaches in the university. He's a big Sanskrit scholar. And he's recognized as a big, big leader now. When the Pope came to visit the U.S., they wanted a representative of the Hindus to meet the Pope. And he was chosen. Out of everybody in North America, he was chosen to meet the Pope. One of our ISKCON men. Now he's a disciple of one of our sannyasis, Hanumat Preshaka Maharaj is his initiating guru. I forget his initiated name. We still remember him as Ravi Gupta. But yeah, the mother stayed at home. She did homeschooling for the kids. And they became brilliant. His little brother also, same thing. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant mind. Because they got the training from a loving Vaishnava mother. You see. So we really recommend... This is the ideal thing. Now, it may not always be practical, but that's the ideal situation. Anything else? Oh, we're going way over time. Okay, we'll stop here. Gantarad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Jai!